Hello, and welcome to the Winding Roads podcast. My name is Catherine Lewiston, and I'm your host. And I'm so pleased to have with me in the studio, Jason Kiley. Jason, can you introduce yourself?
Well, yes. My name is Jason Kiley. I am a studio potter located right here in Viroqua. I've been a studio potter full-time for about 13 years and about 4 or 5 years here in town in Viroqua. My wife and I, and as well as our son, moved here about 6 years ago. And yeah, I instantly started setting up a studio.
Sweet. Yeah, it's the perfect place for it, right? So tell me a little bit more about your background in ceramics. And, you know, you can go as far back as you want in terms of, like, your artistry, your craft, that kind of thing.
Okay. I got into ceramics after already received a degree in the university and was just kind of in a space where I needed something different. And so I tried getting into any art class that I could on college. It was at Minnesota State at Mankato, if anyone wants to know.
Shout out.
But the only class I tried, painting, I tried drawing, I tried all the classes that I had familiar working in, and the only class that was open was ceramics. So I jumped in. I was just taking one class a semester, paying out of pocket just because I was just needed time to do something else. And when it came to summer classes, I signed up for the first time ever. I'd gone through school 5 years in college, never taken a summer course. And the first time I took a summer course was ceramics, and by choice, just because I didn't want to stop. And yeah, by the time summer was over, I'd gotten some grants and set up as a non-traditional student and went back to school for ceramics.
Cool. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I love, like, that's such a clear indication that you're doing what you want to be doing when you choose to give up your summer.
Yes.
To take more school.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what was it about ceramics that really sparked something for you?
I think it was one of the first times that I'd worked in three dimensions that I controlled everything, because you're working with just wet clay, a medium that's soft until you let it dry to work. And so, like I said, like all my previous stuff that I with art was drawing, painting, collage type of things. And so ceramics was just completely different. And yeah, it was just fun and challenging, and I just didn't want to stop.
That's so cool. I mean, when you find something like that where you just want to keep going and keep going and keep going, you got to listen.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So I have noticed, though, that you have a bit of collage in your work. Can you talk a little bit about your style? Because I have to say, I saw one of your pieces before I knew that it was one of your pieces.
Okay.
It was an Optimus Prime.
Yes.
Mug.
Yes.
So like a Transformer body with a John Prine head on this mug, and I found it in the cupboard at work, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. And I grabbed it and I started using it as like a little pencil holder. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out it belonged to a colleague. And so I had to give it back.
Yeah.
But it immediately caught my eye. It was such a kind of quietly clever little pun. And, you know, if somebody doesn't know who John Prine is, maybe they're not going to.
Exactly.
They're going to be like, oh, that's kind of a weird little like collage. But if you do know who John Prine is, like, that's a chuckle.
Yeah, you get to be part of the inside club.
Exactly, yeah.
But I suppose, yeah, I've always liked collage. And I guess that came from growing up, like, in the getting involved in, like, the punk rock scene, DIY scene of the very, like 1990, like, in of all places, Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
But,
like,
sure.
All the flyers, I love the aesthetic. It was, I mean, they honestly looked like ransom notes. Like, okay, every letter's pulled out, and then it's just some random picture off something else, and it's just who's playing next, when they're playing. They're made to just be quick and throw away, just like any poster. And so, mm-hmm. like, with that kind of just cut and paste aesthetic, taking that forward, and then even just marrying it with also around the same or prior to the 90s, the collector's cups that you used to get from McDonald's and Burger King of Smurfs, yeah. Star Wars, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Taking that and combining those together to make imagery to put on cups. And so I'm kind of like the goal ended up in a very roundabout way is just, kind of creating those collector's cups, but in a more contemporary style.
That's so interesting because when I think about something like a McDonald's or a Burger King collector's cup, that is like the height of capitalism, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And then I think about the punk scene and like this very anti-establishment, anarchic kind of vibe. And, you know, at first glance, those two things seem so like antithetical to each other. And mm-hmm. I think it's so cool that you have found a way through your pottery to sort of like bring those, like the kitsch of the collector's cup and the kind of like rough edge of the copy-paste kind of movement, and you've managed to bring those together into something that's like a lasting thing and not something that's gonna like be easily tossed away or not be like safely disposed of. You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Thank you. But yeah, I mean, it came like it also with a lot of those early flyers or even everything in the early punk scene. It's just like you take something and you change it either with a marker, paste, or anything you have, and you make it into creating something completely new. And so mm-hmm. that's kind of it. It's like you're taking something already there and you're riffing on it, you're changing it, you're making commentary, and then it becomes completely a different object. And so that's really kind of where I was coming from with that, with the collage. Also, at the same time, it was right when I started doing that, right when, much later in life, right when the internet memes were getting really big.
Yeah.
And I was either in grad school or just a studio technician at Marshall University in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually kind of fed up with the whole high art scene. And so I dug back into my roots, and I'm just like, I'm making collector's cups. I'm going to use decals, which I just learned how to print and make my own.
Mm.
And I'm just like, and this is just, this is the way and what I'm going to do. And anyone, didn't care what anyone said about like it being high art or low art. I'm just like, no, this is what makes me happy, and this is what I'm going to make.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, more of us in more parts of our lives should have that mentality, right?
Oh, yes.
This is what makes me happy, and so this is what I'm going to do. Can you talk a little bit about your, you know, there's this ever-evolving conversation about art versus craft, about high versus low, whatever, you know. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I consider myself a craftsman. Mm. I don't, like, as much as I could sit and talk art scene stuff, theory, and everything with you,
mm-hmm.
like just like the best one. I went through like graduate level schooling.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, I know that, but I also don't, like, I don't buy into that you need a gallery. I don't mm-hmm. think that you, just because you're using a bright blue, it lowers the intellectualism of your piece.
Yeah.
I'm like, or if there's something recognizable. And so I remember there was a point that it was in grad school where I'm just like, no, I'm divorcing myself from being an artist. I am now a craftsman. I don't want to be associated. I think a lot of it also comes down to the kind of blue collar nature of a ceramic artist. I mean, like, most of us look like construction workers. It's good. Or, like, I mean, yeah, it's dirty Carhartts.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. Because, I mean, like, you're working with your hands, you're getting dirty, and you're really rough on your clothes.
You're working with mud, essentially. Yes. Like, a very specifically kind of, like, mixed sort of mud. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it makes sense that you would be like, you know?
Yeah, and so it's kind of, I just decided, like, no, I'm going to embrace this. And mm-hmm. really what it did was just opened up a lot more avenues for me to go, because I'd closed off so many trying to fit into what I thought was high art or what could be sure. or was going to be considered art, when art is really anything that you produce or make, and then yeah. like that you put feeling into, and that feeling mm-hmm. comes out from someone seeing it.
Yeah. I think one of the coolest things about your body of work is that your work is instantly recognizable. Like, there are all the blessings to all of the coffee mug makers in the world, right?
Yes.
It can sometimes, unless you have purchased the mug from the potter themselves and you know, like, ah, this is a mug that I bought from so-and-so. If somebody else walks into your home, they're maybe not going to know, oh, yeah. this mug comes from, you know, this potter. But if anyone has seen your work, it's they know. they yeah, know yeah. it's your work. And I just think it's so cool that you have such a cool niche sort of built in to, you know, this community in particular. We have a lot of potters and ceramicists.
Yes,
I mean,
we do.
There are quite a few. But I don't think your work could be mistaken for anyone else's.
No, and that's, I think that came out from doing group sales through college.
Mm.
And because I was, like, you all use the same glazes or mm-hmm. the same buckets when you're learning. And
yeah.
so eventually when I got to a point where I was mixing in my own glazes,
yeah.
I wanted my stuff to stand out. And
mm-hmm.
so there's all the runny blues, browns, and everything else that everyone, and generally, I mean, like, the general public really love. That's why
mm-hmm.
you see so many of them.
Yeah.
And so I chose to go with a pastel color palette that you'd see in, like, an old lady's house.
Yeah.
Just because it would stand out like a sore thumb. And
mm-hmm.
so when people are scanning a table full of all the repetitive same colors,
yeah.
they're going to stop at that pastel pink
yeah.
mug. And, and it's going to continue to just get constantly be brought back to that.
Yeah.
And so it was also, I suppose, a color theory along with a business
mm-hmm.
type thing, as well as, once again, kind of pushing back against the whole high art.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very cool. I love a grandma chic.
Yes.
It's really, really neat. Yeah. And so you mentioned that you mixing your own glazes. How much control do you exert over the raw materials? Like, do you mix your own clay as well, or do you kind of order that in? How does that work?
For clay, I order it
okay.
made. It's made in Minneapolis, and I have it shipped.
Cool.
And I ordered 2,000 pounds at a time. That's what you have to order to have a special clay body.
Oh my gosh.
I have a clay body that I've used in graduate school that I continue to use.
Okay.
But for glazes and just about anything else, like, I'll buy 50-pound bags of raw materials and then just mix myself in
gotcha.
The studio.
Cool. And tell me a little bit about your studio. Are you here in town? Like, where are you located? What is your studio like? Paint us a word picture.
I'm in the little house that's down kind of at the end of Court Street, right next to that little tucked-in park. It's maybe 20 by 20 square, like,
okay.
is the house. And the main level is that I've rebuilt or retaken out everything that was making it a home.
Yeah.
And then just turned it into my ceramic studio.
Very cool.
Very luckily, I actually live right next door. And so
wow.
my commute to work is I walk through my backyard, because the house is set much further back than our house, and I put in a gate, like, at the back of our
oh,
lot.
Sweet.
So I just go out the gate, and I just go right into the studio.
I love that. That's a beautiful commute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
it's quite nice.
How do you feel about having... Perhaps it's a moot point with ceramicists because you have so much specialty equipment and it's quite large.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not usually possible to, like, have a small studio in your home, you know. But, like, what do you make of the distance between your home and your studio space? What does that allow you to do mentally? Or, you know, there are a lot of artists that feel very strongly that either they have to have their studio in their home because it makes them feel a certain way, or they have to be separated
yeah.
from their home when they do their work. What are your thoughts on that?
I've had, like, this is the I think the fourth or fifth studio build, I've built out multiple garages and other things like that. And so this is the first time I've had, this is the most space I've ever had. This is the first time I've had running water in a studio in 15 years. Or being in my own studios.
That's got to feel so convenient.
Yes, yeah. And so, I mean, that part's great. But I've also had studios in my basement. I do like the separation. Mm-hmm. My wife loves the separation because there's not red clay dust everywhere in our house. I mean, we're still, it's been 3 years and there's still, it's still turning up, but it could just be me walking through the house like Pigpen. So, but I really enjoy it. Like before I was in this studio space, I was in our basement. And so I had one maybe 20-inch by 15-inch window that I could kind of see the light.
Yeah.
And in this new studio space, I had to replace all the windows in the house. And so I bought larger windows and then cut larger holes. And so now it's almost all natural light.
Oh,
and so
beautiful.
Like it's incredibly nice. And then it is nice to go to work and come back and not hear the distractions of the house not being so easy that someone can just yell down the stairs because they need a question asked.
Yep.
And so I enjoy it. I mean, the most enjoyable part is like I finally have space because in the basement, we had a tuck under garage where I put my kilns and then the raw materials and stuff. And then the other part of our basement, I made into the laundry room, and then the other half was just my studio. And so it was incredibly cramped. And so, yeah, I mean, like, if you really want to do something, you find ways. I mean, like, there's people who really only have maybe a 5x5 or an 8x8 space.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what I had all through college, except for then you have kiln rooms, you have clay-making rooms, stuff like that. And so, but, yeah, and so it is really nice to have just a whole room just for my kilns. And they're not shoved in between other things and the lawnmower beside them. They got to move out. And so,
That's wonderful. That's really nice to have your own space and to have that little bit of separation that creates the friction, you know, both for yourself and for other people. When you are in that space, people know you're working.
Yep.
Right. Rather than being able to, like you said, just kind of shout down the stairs anytime they need you. Yeah. So, is your studio practice a daily one? What's your routine like?
Yeah, it's daily. I do. This is with. I'm able to be a full time studio potter because my wife has a much better job. And so, basically, I'm supplementing.
Sure.
This is my full time and. And because the nature of just being a full-time artist, I don't know how anyone without either a supportive spouse or also full-time working artist spouse can do it, just because there are times of the year where I'm just bringing in money every weekend, and then there's times where I don't bring in anything, like January, February, no one's spending. And so you have to learn how to save money back, to pay your bills and when to spend, but then also to have someone who wants the same thing kind of you do. Like my wife and I, she's a federal park ranger, and so we've both went to school and moved around the country always. Like we would go and work. I would do a studio, a residency, and then we would go and do 9 months where she's doing a part-time gig, and then finally, it was just wherever she could get a job because she was going to get a much better paying job much quicker than I ever was.
Sure.
And so then it was just I would set up shop and build a studio or get the stuff together to build a studio. But it was, that common goal that we both wanted each other to work in the field where we went to school and we both felt or we're both happy with. And so, and by no means are we just scraping by. We're very happy. We live within our means, but it's because we're both, it also makes it a lot easier when you're both enjoy your jobs that you go and spend 40 plus hours a week.
Right. And shout out to the supportive spouses.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely, shout out. Yeah, well, that's very cool. And so are you a early riser, late riser? I mean, I don't want to get too personal, but I'm so curious to know, like, if you, to me, sometimes the perception is that an artist's kind of working life feels very different than someone who would be like just popping into an office for an 8 to 4 or 9 to 5, you know? So I'm curious to know.
I go into work almost every day. Yeah. 7 days a week. I'm going to be doing something in the studio, even mm-hmm. if it's just an hour of flipping kilns, like unloading one, loading another one,
sure.
or going in, taking things out, or uncovering them so they can dry, and then mm-hmm. stopping back in. Mm-hmm. But normally, I try to set my hours the same as my wife's, and so I'm working the same. I'm up, I have coffee in the morning, I go to the studio. Yeah. I come home at lunch, mm-hmm. I make myself lunch, and then I'll go back to the studio and work till dinner.
Cool.
And then every once in a while, I'll go back in mm-hmm. at night, but then that's just kind of to play around like with new stuff. I'm not necessarily trying to, like, not doing work things, but just working with clay, like mm-hmm. whether it's something like building new molds, making new molds, or just trying to figure out some kind of new process that I don't have time to do during the day because I have X, Y, and Z that need to get checked off the list because I have shows coming up. And so, like, I do mm-hmm. have all, I suppose, the deadlines of a normal job, but they're just kind of self-imposed because I need to have work for the next show or the next thing event.
Do you find that your evening time feels like play?
Yeah, when I go in just to work and do what I want, like, it's exactly. I'm doing things that make myself laugh, or I'm just like, well, I wonder what this would look like.
Yeah.
And then I just do it, and I find out. And a lot of times that will influence what the kind of next thing is. And so,
very cool.
Yeah, and a lot of times through that, just play or making things that you know are going to fail, that's when you learn.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. So how did you get involved with Winding Road's art tour?
I heard about it right away when we moved here, mm-hmm. what was it, 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The first one I'd signed up for was actually right when we were purchased the little house right next to our house. So the first one was actually going, I was going to have people come through our tuck under garage and see half our basement and stuff, because I'm just like, no, I'm a local artist. Look, this is where I work.
Yeah.
Last minute I decided just to move it over to mm-hmm. To the studio now. But like when it was still like half under construction, it was still just wood or like plywood floors, like windows, like kind of half done, but just because it would be its own space.
Yeah.
And I knew by the next year that I would be in there full time. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, to avoid confusion, I'm just like, well, let's just move it over there. And so it was a weird beginning to Winding Roads and being in a half-finished studio with my kind of finished work. But it's all worked out from there.
Well, and kind of cool that whoever toured your studio that first year
mm-hmm.
and then came back again the second year got the transformation.
Yes.
Oh, you know?
Yes.
They got to see sort of like, here's what it's like in just the beginnings. And then the next year, they're like, oh, that's the vision.
Yeah, and even the following year, and even mm-hmm. this year.
Yeah.
Like, so 1 year,
the work
people will come
done.
In, and they'll actually see the window trim up on the windows instead of just leaning against the wall.
Not a big deal.
No.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. So I think we've touched on this a little bit, but I'm curious to know, like, if you can put your finger on it, what is the magic in your work? What is the thing that kind of keeps you coming back to it and feeling like it's something that you want to keep doing?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down just with the medium of clay because it's, you can spend a lifetime and still have a lifetime to learn. Like,
you're the second ceramicist who has said that.
Yeah,
on this podcast.
You can't learn everything. Mm-hmm. Not even close. And I'm sure that's probably with a lot of different mediums too.
Mm-hmm.
But also, ceramics is probably one of the only mediums that you get to pull in any other medium. Because you can paint on clay as if you're painting on canvas. You can build with clay as if you're working with iron. You can print, screen print on clay. You can do any type of printing on clay. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the functional pottery, but then even the sculptural aspect too. Yeah. And so you can cast things to mimic anything else. And so like whatever you kind of, it is really one of those things that if you can imagine it, there is a way to do it.
Yeah.
And so I think that really, really speaks to me in that I've always have like a problem or a riddle, something to figure out. Mm-hmm. Like I mean, it's like, and a lot of times that's how it, when I'm trying to come up with something, I'll just it's like, how could you, would this even be possible? Or how would I do this?
Yeah.
And so, and then thinking back through like how that would be done. Like my original, my background in clay is actually in sculpture. Like that's what all my degrees are, is in ceramic sculpture and regular sculpture.
Yeah.
But it's much harder to sell sculpture than pots or coffee mugs. And so along the way, I've taken one pottery class, that's all. But then I just kept throwing and then just kind of ended up as a studio potter because that's, I'd throw cups and pots around Christmas time for bringing extra income.
Mm-hmm.
And I slowly started building a clientele who wanted work year round. And so I really graduated or went from graduate school with a sculpture degree straight into becoming just a studio potter and just was
figuring out
things along the way and then figuring out how to kind of blend like sculpture, bring that stuff in too to the ceramic work.
Nice.
So I think, yeah, in a nutshell, it's just because there can be something absolutely brand new, like every day that you walk into that studio. And so I think that's it.
That's awesome. That's some magic. That's very cool. Last question. If you were to ascribe some kind of image or metaphor to your creative practice, what might that be?
Oh, geez. Probably like the cartoon where a guy gets hit in the head and there's just either the birds or they're flying around or it's just that circus music that's always going in someone's head. Like, exactly. That's pretty much the aesthetic or how I envision my creative process. There's always multiple things I'm thinking of and sometimes they just get blend together and it's just like, well, yeah, I have a curious mind and I am not afraid to fail. And so I will try to make kind of anything. And so it is like, if people are just like, what's going through your mind? And it's like more than you can understand. it's constantly changing and it's always, it's quick.
Maybe more than you can understand at any one given time. Absolutely. Very cool. Oh, I love that. So any last words as we wrap up this episode? Is there anything you want to plug? Any, you know, aside from Winding Roads, are there any places that you're showing work or are there places online where we can find you?
You can find me online at www.oneeyedcatcrafts.com.
Okay.
Here in Viroqua, you can find my work at the public market.
Awesome.
Just a couple blocks down from DRT. Mm-hmm. And you can also find at the Driftless Records.
Cool.
Driftless Angler.
And nice.
And sometimes the Mercantile, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So kind of all over. I've been here long enough. It's small town. You meet a lot of people. And,
absolutely.
I like making things for people who live around here.
Yeah, very cool. Well, thank you so much, Jason.
You bet. Thank you so much for having me.